Wedding Ceremony Podcast. We talk about anything and everything that has to do with wedding ceremonies. This is episode number 212, recorded on Friday, November the 9th, 2018. My name is Clint Huff, and normally with me is J.P. Reynolds, but today is not a normal day. Today is a special day, and we have a very special guest. I'm so excited. She is joining us all the way from Paris, France. Would you please say hello to Michelle Wahila?
Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Did I pronounce your name correctly, Wahila?
You did. That's impressive.
Well, the bar is set extremely low, so I think we're going to do just fine. So the first thing, you're not from France, and people will be able to tell that just by listening to you. Originally, I'm looking at your bio. Your website is Ruffled by Grace. R-U-F-F as in Frank, L-E-D-B-Y-G-R-A-C-E, ruffledbygrace.com. And then I'm looking at the bio that you have on there, and it's really, really impressive. The first thing is that you were born and raised in New York.
That's true. I'm an upstate New York girl at heart. I think I will always be a New Yorker.
Yeah, that's the feeling that I get. My wife is from New York, and you just have the feeling that, you know, you can take the kid off the farm, but you can't take the farm out of the kid. Why did you move, or why do you live in Paris?
Oh my goodness. It was a long journey to get from upstate New York to Paris, and we actually moved by way of Pittsburgh. We were there for years.
The conduit. Pittsburgh is also known as the conduit to Paris.
Absolutely. But, you know, one thing led to another, and I was taking a job in Paris in 2012. And so after being raised in New York and from a very small town, going to Pittsburgh, serving a church there for many years, and then voila, we moved to Paris.
So when you say we, that means your family, your husband and your kids?
Yes, my dear husband, also raised in upstate New York. And then our two boys, both born in Pittsburgh. And they consider themselves Pittsburghers. So there's a little bit of tension there. But we are all somewhat Parisian now.
Okay, so how old are the children?
My oldest is almost 10, and my youngest boy is 7.
Fantastic. 10 and 7, and they consider themselves Pittsburghians.
Yeah, I think forever they will.
It's kind of neat they have that anchor, you know what I mean? That kind of sense of, I don't know, place, I guess. But you're
Absolutely.
Saying that because, how long have you been in Paris?
Well, we've been here since 2012, so they're really more French than anything.
And so they're bilingual, I'm guessing.
Yes, a beautifully bilingual, way better than I will ever be.
Did your husband pick up the language?
He also speaks French better than I do, but I'm the worst I am out of our family, but I work in English. So it's sort of par for the course, I guess, because I'm always working in English, and I worked in English when we first moved here. So my practice of the language is just not nearly as good as theirs.
I see that you were ordained by word and sacrament in the Presbyterian Church. So explain to me the journey of wanting to go into clergy, and then just kind of walk me through that decision, the process of getting ordained or whatever. You have a Master's of Divinity from Pittsburgh Theological Seminary. And so just kind of, I mean, that's a major life choice. So just kind of walk me through all that.
Yeah, I was actually pretty young when I felt a call to ministry. I was probably 14 or 15 years old. And I did a lot of work with our church. I was very involved in helping nonprofit organizations who serve the hungry, as well as some organizations that did building in Appalachia for those who couldn't afford to do home repairs. And it really just stole my heart. And I felt like my life's vocation would be somehow to serve people. And that call grew and grew. And I ended up in school studying theology. And then, I got my Master's of Divinity and sought ordination to the Presbyterian Church, USA. And so that's where I received my ordination and my first call to ministry and served for many years before I sort of switched gears to weddings.
Well, okay, so that means you worked in a regular church, correct?
I did. Yeah. Yeah. For over a decade, actually, I served churches. Well, several churches, but my first ordained call was in Pittsburgh. I served a great church in the middle of the city for over 10 years. And then I moved to Paris to take another church call. So I've definitely been in the church for a long time.
Oh, no kidding. That's interesting. To a Presbyterian church in Paris?
To an interdenominational church. Yeah. I served the American church in Paris, actually. In 2012, I moved to take that call and served there for about 3.5 years before I took a great big step back to be a better mom and wife. And then came the weddings.
Oh, okay. So what I just heard you say is that you got ordained Presbyterian, and then you worked in Pittsburgh at a church, and then as you know, in the pulpit?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. All sorts of ministry.
How does that work? I mean, I was raised in a Lutheran church, and it was my understanding that the pastors were assigned a church by the governing group, you know, the that was a Missouri Synod. So they would say, okay, you graduated, you're now a pastor or a minister for the Lutheran church, and we want you to go to work there. Did it work like that?
No, actually, one of the things I really, really appreciate about the Presbyterian Church USA is that call is sort of this process. It's a dance between the church and the pastors who are seeking calls. So there's this discussion that happens where you also get some choice. The church gets choice and you have choice. And it's an interview process just like any other vocation or job. And you sort of decide if you're a good match. And so that's normally the process in the Presbyterian Church. And it's how I received my first call in Pittsburgh. And basically the same way I received my call in Paris as well.
That is so cool. It's like the sorting hat in Harry Potter. The hat yes, takes exactly. your wishes into consideration. Oh, I love
exactly.
that.
Exactly. It's really, really great for families particularly, or for people who are tied to a location because maybe they're caring for elderly parents, or I mean, who knows what the situation right. is, but it gives a little bit more choice in the matter. And I really feel like that makes call a mutual blessing for people.
So what's fascinating to me is your husband, because it sounds to me like he met you in upstate New York, or where did you meet? Were you already in the church when you met?
So we met in high school, actually, in upstate New York.
See?
Yep. And at that point, the point where when we met, I already had sensed this call. So it is a bit strange. He's never known me, you know, any other way. But it was, you know, like anything, it's a growing process. Yeah, it's a little crazy. And he's an engineer, which is pretty much the polar opposite.
Now I'm curious about, you moved to Paris, you were with a church, but it sounds to me like you made a decision and you left that church, kind of pulled back in order to spend more time with your family. And then you began what you're doing now. Is that the right timeline?
That's more or less what happened. So I served the church in Paris for about 3.5 years. And at that point, instead of renewing my contract, because we were on multiple year contracts, I decided that I really needed to be home with my boys more than I was serving the church. So as difficult as that was, I knew my family needed me more. My husband, my kids, they needed me. So I took a step back. I said, I'm not going to do anything except be a mom. And that didn't last long. Actually.
Wait, what does that mean?
Well, you know, what does an unemployed English speaking pastor do in Paris? I thought there's not really anything for me to do. But it was one of the photographers with whom I work quite often and who I worked with at the church who said, there is a place for you here in Paris, doing weddings, marrying people, exactly what you do, blessing people in the church. That is needed in Paris. And I said, no. And I really put up a pretty good fight. And one wedding led to two weddings, which led to 10 weddings.
Well, what was your reticence? Why were you hesitant to take on that?
I think it was just this point where I had made this major life decision to be mom, to be more mom and more wife, and to be at home and to serve people in other ways, to host, you know, events and Bible studies. And I was just very content and wasn't thinking that I was going to be in ministry any longer. And it was just another shift, you know, but that's like anything in life. There's these shifts and all we do is follow, and hopefully we're following well and being faithful and led me to my next spot. So I can't complain.
And when did you begin doing that? Do the weddings in Paris?
That was probably, I mean, I had taken a few while I was at the church just because I knew so many pastors, and like they were like, oh, I have this couple, they're getting married in Paris and they want a pastor and they're kind of hard to come by. So, you know, I had done one or two here or there, and it was probably in 2016 where I thought, okay, maybe this is the next path. And then it just blew up.
Oh yeah, I would think so. So to now what you're doing, if I understand correctly, people find you and they want to get, do that mean they get legally married in Paris? Probably a lot of vow renewals. So explain the business.
Yeah, so actually it's really hard for foreigners to be married in France in general. And so we recommend that you do your paperwork in your home country. And for most of my clients, as an English-speaking pastor, like that's Americans or folks from the UK, Australia. So they do the legal side of things wherever they are. And then we do the fun part, the blessing and the ceremony in Paris. And so it's actually quite lovely.
So how do you decide where the ceremonies take place?
It all depends on what the couple, you know, what the clients want. But if you're coming to Paris, you want Paris in the background. And so I do a lot of Eiffel Tower ceremonies, or like the beautiful gardens around the city, and they're all public. So we go really early in the morning to avoid all the tourists. But it's actually quite intimate as much as it's in a public space. It's usually a really lovely and intimate ceremony. And yes, a lot of vow renewals, lots of vow renewals.
So if I heard you correctly, you started doing this 2 years ago. So in the 2 years, do you have a guesstimate of how many you've done?
Oh my goodness. I should probably have been keeping track, but I never thought it was going to explode the way it did. And you know, got to June this past year and I was like, oh my goodness, this is really a thing.
Well, the thing that I think is fascinating is that most of us in the wedding business, most of the work is on the weekends, but I'm guessing that because people are on vacation, that every day of the week, it's possible that you could be helping somebody.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, and most people who come to Paris, they, like you said, they're on vacation. So they want a Tuesday where it's going to be cheaper to get everything else than it is on the weekends. And really that's the perfect fit for me, for our family. We kind of have our normal family stuff on the weekends, and then I work all week. And so, yeah, for me too, it's great. It's fabulous. I love Tuesday morning weddings.
Do people need special permits to do what you do? I mean, let me ask a better question. Not you, but do the people that are going to get vow renewals or whatever, do they need any special permits to go wherever they need to go? Or does it depend on the amount of people?
It really depends, but normally no. I mean, on any given morning, you can walk to Trocadero where that overlooks, you know, the Eiffel Tower, and you can see a dozen brides. I mean, they're all getting their pictures taken mostly. but, you know, you have to find your spot and do a little like dance with all the brides. But we do that and then have our little ceremony. And no, I mean, it's a public park for the most part where we go. So
do you have a set ceremony? How do you construct what you say?
So my niche is obviously Christian weddings, but I do all sorts of weddings and they're all bespoke. But I do use a Reformed Christian tradition outline, but then I take everything I learn about the couple through the questionnaire and the interview, and I write something for them. And what I love about that is the opportunity for those who are seeking a Christian ceremony to weave their love story in with scripture. I adore doing that. And it's just, for me, it's the creative side of ministry that I was missing, that it's the chance to be able to do that for people. So I write everything from scratch for every couple.
Anything multicultural or interfaith, thing like that?
I've actually here typically, like, my couples find me, and it's because they're wanting a Christian ceremony. I probably did more interfaith ceremonies in Pittsburgh when I was serving the church.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. It is interesting. But I do find people who say, I just like the way you speak about love. We're not Christian. Will you still bless us? And it's funny that they'll even use that word. Will you bless us? And I thought, well, I'm not going to turn down blessing anyone.
I like that. I'm looking at the picture on your landing page, and it's kind of neat. You've got the traditional white collar that most people associate with clergy, but then you're wearing a dress with the lace sleeves, and that looks like a custom deal.
Yeah, it is. So I have this great designer. She designs for women clergy, and we found each other by, I don't know, a serendipitous, like, internet meeting, but it's perfect for me because I hate feeling like I'm shoved into a man's clergy shirt. That's
right.
Just not me.
Is the seamstress that you're talking about, or the tailor, or however you describe what she does, is she in Paris as well?
No, she's in the UK. Her company is called Collard, which is appropriate. And they're just fabulous. It's modern and well-fitting, and it's perfect. And
just to share with people, is it collard.com? Collard, do you know?
You know, it's a UK address, so I'm going to just look it up for you, and I'll come back to it. But they only design for women, and so it's like what we've all been waiting for.
It says collardclergywear.co.uk.
Yes, that's correct.
That's it?
Yep.
Well, that was lucky. Thank you, Google.
Yay!
Okay, I'll put that in the show notes so that people know. Sandra.
Yep, that's
her. Look at her, that photo. She looks like a fun person. How much interaction do you have with your couples? Oh, and the other thing, do you do same sex as well?
Absolutely. Everyone deserves love and blessing. And so it's sort of a stand, I guess, that I've taken, which today you wouldn't even think would be controversial, but it is. And I remain steadfast. So yeah, I will bless the couples that want blessing.
Good on you. Well, our audience is all on the same page. So when you're in Paris, and you're out in public. Now, you did say that you like to meet them early in the morning. I kind of think that you kind of control that whole situation. But I'm guessing that you have a couple of stories to tell about just, I don't know, surprise.
You know, you never know what you're going to get in Paris, in public. But there have been times when we will draw a crowd. And, you know, there was this one wedding that they really were committed to having communion, to having the Lord's Supper, the sacrament, as a part of their ceremony. And so we were at the Champ de Mars under the Eiffel Tower. It is a gorgeous day. And we have this picnic with bread and wine, among other marvelous nourriture. But by the end, I felt like I could have planted a church and just put out the call to everyone to come, because we had been surrounded with people taking photos. And I thought, gosh, I just need to sit on the Champ de Mars every Friday and offer communion to people. But it didn't quite plant a church that day, but it was a reminder that those moments where you're doing something special and important, and for me, holy, like, that draws people in. And so I just normally just let there be an audience.
It's fascinating, that old story of when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. This is kind of like a twist on that. You know, when spirituality is needed, or then people are drawn to wherever it's happening. I mean, did you get that feeling?
Yeah, totally. And I mean, it's part of the reason I wear a collar. I mean, in France, if you see someone in collar, it's going to be a man. I mean, it's predominantly Catholic in terms of Christianity. And so I am odd. I am small. I wear sneakers and I wear my collar. So it's just like people stop and stare. I mean, there were times we have a lot of military patrols because we go near the landmarks. And there was this one time where like all of the military just stopped to watch the ceremony with their machine guns. And I thought, it's got to be because it's this small blonde priest looking person marrying two guys. But, you know, it was a good day. We take everyone.
That's really cool. Well, what does the future hold for you, Michelle? What do you think? I mean, is it what it is and there's no reason to change, or do you have plans for something different?
I love what I do right now. I absolutely love the clients and telling the stories. And so I will continue to bless people to do as many weddings as I possibly can. But I've also really felt a need to do a bit of education for my pastoral colleagues. And so coming in May, I'm going to do some continuing education for pastors just to talk about how we can do better as the church. I mean, so many people are picking not the church for their weddings. And I think there's a lot of reasons for that. And I think I have, in the position that I am in right now, being partially in the industry and sort of partially in the church, I've learned a lot from the industry and I've learned why people are choosing not the church. So I'm hoping to help the church, help pastors also see where we can do better. Because I think that's part of faith, that's part of growing. And so if I can have a small, tiny voice in that, I would be honored and proud.
Yeah, my gut is telling me that one of the reasons people move away from the church is perhaps because they feel a little bit more freedom if they're not confined by the liturgy of the church. Am I close on that?
Yeah, I think you are. And I think that's why I have really attempted to write modern liturgy for people or write their love story into the service. I think the Reformed Christian marriage ceremony outline is beautiful, but I don't think we need to just open the book and repeat it every time we have a wedding.
I did do that when a couple asked me to do a vow renewal for them, 30, 40 years, whatever. And we actually went back to the church where they got married. And I realized as I was kind of watching, you know, I had a meeting with them before, and, you know, in the back of the pews, they usually have the hymnals, and the back of the hymnals are the rituals, you know, baptism and all that kind of stuff. And I found the marriage ceremony, and I thought to myself, I know for a fact 40 years ago, this is exactly what the pastor said. And so we incorporated that into their vow renewal. You know what I mean? And so,
right, absolutely.
And so there is that kind of neat balance between the what do they call it? It's not familiar, but it's traditional. There you go. From the traditional text, but also I like the way you personalize it as well. How much interaction do you have with the couples before you actually meet them in Paris?
That's a great question. It all depends because, you know, if you're talking like a huge wedding with a full worship service and communion, that's going to require more communication than a small vow renewal or an elopement. But I do have a Skype or Zoom FaceTime interview with folks, as well as the interview questions that they fill out for me. And I ask all sorts of things, you know, from stories about how they fell in love to what their experience is with the church. But I think that helps me understand where they're coming from.
Sure.
And so, you know, we might have one meeting, we might have five meetings. It really depends. But I think hopefully we just hit that balance of what they need and want and what I need in order to do something special for them.
I like what I'm hearing from you. It's very much tailored and it all depends on what's right for the couple. If you have communion and the sacrament into the ceremony, what's the average length of what you do?
It probably is a bit longer than most of the other celebrants, my celebrant colleagues, but you know, it can be 45 minutes with communion, depending on how many people there are to be served. So it's not maybe going to quite hit like a full hour for as if a mass, you know, in terms of that. But, you know, I like to hit between 20 and 30 minutes anyway, because I feel like you need enough to feel like something special has happened here. Like this is important. But not too much that people are bored out of their minds. And
what's the biggest crowd, or no, what, not the crowd, because that implies just bystanders. What's the biggest group that you've served for a wedding? Because you're always outdoors, right?
No, not necessarily. There are some great, great venues and the chateaus. I mean, you can't beat the French chateaus on the outside of Paris. But, you know, you could bring 100 people here if you want. It's just a matter of, like, planning. I do tend to have smaller weddings, though, you know, 20 and under, just because it's easier for folks to get fewer people here.
What's the average of indoor to outdoor?
Oh, the indoor weddings are by far larger. I mean...
Oh, I didn't ask the right question. In terms of how many you do...
Ah.
Yeah. What's the ratio between indoor and outdoor?
It's probably 2 to 1.
2 to 1 outdoor?
Outdoor, for sure. I mean, the Eiffel Tower, you can't beat that.
I know. That's what I was thinking. You know, go to Paris and then you walk into some hotel ballroom. You know what I mean? But you did say the chateaus. I want to acknowledge that. But if you're coming to Paris, there has to be something that just screams Paris, and nothing screams Paris like the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah, pretty much. And everyone wants it. You know, you think, oh, people are going to get bored with this or bored with like my Instagram photos, but no, people love it because it really shows something different. It shows that there's options for people, that aren't, you know, just their average elopement either. And so, I mean, I'll put as many Eiffel Tower pictures on Instagram as people want, you know.
Do you have a standard price, or does it vary on the day of the week?
It varies according to mostly size of the wedding, because that is going to determine how much time and planning and how much work I need to do.
Right.
Sense. I also have a price that's really low and reasonable for elopements and vow renewals, because I think as a pastor, I don't want to price anyone out of blessing. That's really important to me. And I don't want to undercut my colleagues and the other celebrants here, but I also want to always make sure there's an option that people can afford.
That is really cool. Michelle, you mentioned your Instagram. And so I kind of think it'd be neat if you don't mind, just let people know how they can get in touch with you.
Absolutely. So I am Ruffled by Grace. And as confusing as that is for people, it's a theological concept that I'm committed to. So I am just ruffledbygrace.com on for
and
my
what's
website.
Your Instagram?
It is Instagram.com/ruffledbygrace.
Oh, brilliant. Michelle, thank you so much. I just have such a good feeling about what you're doing. Not just because you're helping people have a moment, you know, romantic moment, but it also feels to me like your calling is bringing the Spirit into the lives of these people that are being able to, you know, kind of have that balance of well, everything, if you know what I mean. I think it's awesome, and I'm sending you good thoughts, and I thank you so much for taking the time. We started at 5:30 in the afternoon your time and 8:30 in the morning my time, so I'm glad that it all worked out.
Thank you so much for having me. It's just such a joy and a pleasure to share a little bit about what we do here, and thank you so much.
All right, everybody, that's the way this works, the Wedding Ceremony Podcast. You never know who we're going to talk to or what we're going to talk about. And I highly recommend that you go to our website. It's weddingceremonypodcast.com, because all the episodes are right there. They're archived chronologically. That means that the most recent one is at the top, but you can kind of pick and choose about, you know, there's 212 of them. And the other thing you could do is go to the Apple iTunes store, the podcast section, because that's where we live as well. And what I like about that is that you can subscribe to the podcast. Then every time we post a new episode, it'll automatically come into your world. Plus, all the podcast apps access the Apple iTunes podcast store. And then it's just, you know, you're rocking and rolling in the best way possible. Remember that JP's books are in the Amazon store, the Kindle store and Amazon. And we want to thank, again, the incredible musicians that play our theme music, the DaCapo Players, DaCapo Players. .com. If there's somebody that you think that we should reach out to that would be a wonderful guest for the Wedding Ceremony Podcast, then email us. You'll go to our website, weddingceremonypodcast.com, click on the email us button, and just give us the information or ask us a question or do whatever you want to do. That's it for this episode of the Wedding Ceremony Podcast. This is Clinton. On behalf of Michelle, we will see you next time.
That was the Brandenburg Concerto No. 3.